Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Josh Berger.
And I'm Brian Lomax. And today Josh and I are going to discuss a recently published case study about a serve intervention that was done in the UK, in Britain. I just found this interesting. It was sent out in a newsletter recently from the Association for Applied Sports Psychology that this had been done. And we thought what we would do today is kind of go through this in a very structured format of presenting the case study and then also ending up, hopefully, with some practical implications for all of you who are listening, to see if this is an intervention that you would like to use with your serve routine. And the whole goal was to increase first serve percentage. So, Josh, why don't you get us started off with describing the case?
Absolutely. One other thing is we'd love to, I know we've mentioned this before, but we'd love to hear your feedback. We would love to hear what you thought of us presenting this research and some of our findings and takeaways from this published research. Hear what you thought of this sort of episode. We always love hearing from people. So to get things started, a little bit about the case. So this took place in a tennis venue in Great Britain. These were players that were struggling with first serve percentage in competition. I think they mentioned in the study it was around players at around 53% first serve percentage, so something around there. It took place with four players and junior players between 14 and 16. And what they referred to as sort of a sub-elite level of play, players that were, not necessarily competing at the national or regional level, but competing at the county level. So players that were competing in tournaments a little bit closer to them, not necessarily, if we were to compare this to the U.S., not necessarily the level ones, twos, threes, and fours, probably closer to maybe the level sixes, level sevens, or maybe level fives, but not at the national or the regional level, or maybe even not the USTA level tournaments, maybe more, like a club tournament or a local tournament. It was interesting how this was, quite a small sample size. Sometimes we see studies, oftentimes we see studies that have far more participants, but this study chose a different sort of design with fewer participants, but more of an in-depth design where, more actually took place in terms of the intervention and there was a lot more that went into it with each participant.
Yeah. So the next step in the case is really to, assess what's happening and come up with a case formulation. And so to do that, all the players were interviewed and their struggles were discussed. And what came out of it was that serving percentages and serving technique seemed fine in practice and in training, but suffered in competitive matches. Also, the players, there were differences in their, the structure of their between point routine. So there was not a lot of consistency necessarily to that whole part, including the serve ritual. And so they had matches charted previously, so they knew what the data was from previous competitive matches in terms of first serve percentage. Like you said, Josh, was like maybe around 53%, which was deemed not satisfactory. And so the idea was, can we come up with something that is going to help these players serve better in competition and really deal with that extra perhaps anxiety or nerves that goes with playing in competition. So that was something that was common amongst the four players.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think also it's interesting, and I would agree that 53% is probably a bit lower than a player wants, but I would say at the, certainly at this level and, probably above this level, the regional level, maybe even certain aspects of the national level, I think there's a lot of players that are probably at around this range or lower. Junior players, adult players, I think, yeah, I think there's a lot of play people that could, improve their first serve percentage so that they're not relying as much on their second serve. And I think that's a great way to take, take some pressure off of yourself as well and maybe make things a little bit easier. But we can get back to that point. But I think that was interesting though, that that was determined as something that they wanted to work on based on seeing that sort of a first serve percentage. So in terms of the intervention itself, they used an ABA design. So essentially it's they were withdrawing, they were implementing the intervention and then withdrawing it. So they at first they were essentially teaching and implementing the intervention, and then they took it away at the end to sort of see what players would do without necessarily having access to using the diaphragmatic breathing in this way. So that was very interesting in terms of how that was implemented. They instructed players to add in the diaphragmatic breath with an exhale that's longer than their inhale prior to serving. Some of the players had already some sort of established in-between point routine, and some of them did not. Really the purpose here was, or two main purposes were, first of all, to reduce anxiety, and then second of all, to try to improve attentional focus.
And to get back to your point about the serve percentage, there was also some mentions of how increases in serve percentage have an impact on better outcomes in tennis. So even if it was 53 or whatever it was, just by looking to increase first serve percentage, and I think this is a good message for everybody who's listening, can have some positive impacts on outcomes of matches. I would think also, on your confidence as well. Right. So that was the intervention. They wanted to add a diaphragmatic, a belly breath, as the last part of whatever ritual or routine that you had prior to serving. So in terms of the delivery of the intervention, there are really two pieces here. There was an off-court part and then there was an on-court part. So the off-court part was a one-hour workshop on belly breathing. And this is something that both Josh and I teach players to do. You might call it diaphragmatic breathing, you might call it belly breathing, but it's essentially when you inhale, you're pushing your stomach out and you're not tightening up your stomach. You're using the diaphragm as a relaxation response. And so you want it to be soft. There was a reference in the article to jelly belly as being something to do, right? They also use some props to show how to, like a balloon to show how to breathe in this way. And so the players were instructed on the actual techniques and then the benefits of it, and then encouraged to practice this type of breathing on their own for a couple of weeks. And so I think that's a great intervention, regardless of whether we're going to add this to a serve ritual, is to work on diaphragmatic breathing, and specifically here, making sure the exhale is longer than the inhale. So that is a way of reducing or lowering your heart rate, which helps to reduce anxiety. So we're going for reducing anxiety and improving attention. On court, the players were instructed to make this belly breath the last part of their routine, right before going into the serve. And as you know, we've been talking about, because of the level of the player, no other real additions to the routine were made. And there was, you know, great variety between the four players. And, you know, they could have added stuff like visualization or other maybe motivational self-talk or where you want to look, maybe serve plus one, whatever. But they were, the only other thing they were asked to do was just make sure they picked a target. So use some instructional self-talk. So the on-court piece, they wanted the players to work on that for a period of time until they felt comfortable using it in a competitive situation. And that time frame varied from player to player. So it was about, the range was 2 to 5 weeks. And then once they felt comfortable with it, then they were going to be measured in about 6 to 8 different tournament matches as a means of showing a difference between the pre-intervention and then the post-intervention. And then there was a withdrawal piece in which they then asked the players to not do the belly breathing, and then they would measure that in competition. And of course, that's a little bit of a difficult conversation because, you know, let's say it worked, and now you're saying, okay, this thing that we just did for you that worked, we want to take it away. And, you know, I guess in terms of the maybe scientific kinds of perspective, we understand it because it's trying to isolate the actual intervention. Like, did it truly work or not? Or were there other factors in play? And so that was studied as well. And so then that leads us to the results.
Yeah. So with the results, first serve percentage increased by 3.91%. So there was a very clear increase and meaningful increase in that first serve percentage. And they also mentioned in this article that even in an increase of 1 or 2% can really make a real difference in a player's performance in terms of their likelihood to win a match. So the fact that first serve percentage increased by, you know, nearly 4% really shows a significant impact here. Given the fact that first serve percentage tends to have an impact on both confidence and match outcomes, this was considered significant. But when that intervention was withdrawn, and Brian mentioned how sort of that last step was them taking away that diaphragmatic breath where, you know, players were instructed not to use it. It was interesting because serve percentages didn't go back to the pre-intervention levels. They weren't as good as they were during the intervention, but they were still improved compared to where they were prior to the intervention taking place, probably implying that, you know, something was learned, something was ingrained, whether they were, even though they weren't necessarily trying to use their breath intentionally and using the diaphragmatic breath in that way, it seems like something was still learned because, you know, it was still improved from that starting point. So that was interesting as well when it comes to the results.
For sure. Yeah. So if we are to discuss, you know, some practical implications, Josh, and then our own thoughts on this and how we might use this or even expand on it, you know, I think it's a nice demonstration that very simple interventions can work. There's a quote in there about how, you know, tennis is a simple game played by complicated people. And that's interesting. You know, I think it's true. I think the more that we can simplify, the better. And just adding something like this is great. I think it has a lot of positive benefits that we can get into. I think it's certainly easy to experiment with. You know, anybody who's listening can certainly add one nice centering belly breath before they serve and just really kind of releasing the shoulders. I think there are a few things in my mind here that are at work, Josh. When we talk about belly breathing, it's also part of that is relaxation training or becoming aware of your tension relaxation state. You know, and I think if we were to work with, say, slightly more advanced players, maybe we'd add a little bit more like awareness of that body state. But anybody can do this. And just by practicing it over and over again, you're just going to get better at it. And you're just going to be more focused. I think that's one aspect of this too, is you're turning your brain on. You're really creating some mental coherence when you do this type of breathing. I'd also recommend doing this before your second serve as a means of slowing things down, right? And then, yeah, we can obviously layer on some other things. So before I go any further on this, Josh, you know, what do you think are some of the practical implications or applications of this for people listening?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, you know, some of the biggest takeaways are that, yeah, that breathing and diaphragmatic breathing really has a positive impact, a tangibly and, you know, meaningfully positive impact on, you know, first serve percentage. But yeah, I think that the same is also true if you use it before your second serve, if you use it before returning as well, which was, you know, not covered in this study, but certainly, you know, relevant as well. And, you know, I think when we think about what's controllable and what's not as tennis players, and certainly there are plenty of things out of our control, like everything that's happening on the other side of the court with our opponent and, you know, plenty of other things, our breath is something that we have control over. We have control over when we breathe, how we breathe, you know, can we make it a system that we use before each point and really try to, you know, be consistent and stick with it. And, you know, it's a process, especially if you're not using it regularly. There's a process. And I think also, you know, in this study, they used a process in terms of sort of a progression from, you know, the players being taught this skill off the court, I think in some sort of like a classroom or, you know, or just a sort of a room off the court, and then using it in sort of more of a closed sense in terms of just using it in more of a structured way and maybe being guided by the sports psychology professional, and then using it in a full set. So I think, yeah, just like they used a progression here, you know, it takes time to really develop this skill of using your breath and using your routine before points in a really consistent way. And I think the consistency of it, you know, generally is what leads to the improved performance. So I think that's definitely one of the biggest takeaways, that by using your breath in this way and, you know, getting to the point where you can use it consistently, that it will improve your performance. And I think most people do find that. They find that once they're able to use it more regularly, it helps them in those big points where maybe they're in a tiebreaker or they're at a deuce, you know, it's a deuce point or whatever it may be. But it also helps them in general. So I think it's, you know, it's really important just to get to that point where you can be using it regularly and in order to really, you know, receive some of the biggest effects here.
Yeah. And you kind of alluded to the on-court plan. I didn't get into the details of that, but, you know, the on-court training, you know, that whether it was 2 or 5 weeks or somewhere in between, really was made up of dedicated serving practice where you would use it. There was what they called closed play, meaning they were playing points, but they'd really only go from shots 1 to 4 and then stop. So if the point was still going on, they would stop it. So that means it's not open-ended. And then they would also play sets where there's open play, you can finish all the points. And so that gives players, you know, the opportunity to build confidence in the skill, to build the skill. They didn't just simply introduce it straight away into competition. So I think that's I think it shows a really good way of introducing new skills to players so that they can build up from training to really a practice match situation to then a competitive situation so that they feel comfortable with whatever it is that they're learning. so that, you know, in that last stage, it's really more the test piece of it. So I thought that was really good. I think when we look at these interventions, there's maybe even more going on than what the study implies, right? It implies this breathing as a means of anxiety reduction, which I agree it is. But I would look at it almost in three skills that, like, Charlie Unwin talks about in his book, Inside Out, which is really mental coherence, active relaxation, and then more on the positive emotions and focus piece, right? And so the breathing part is really a lot about that mental coherence. You're getting your body in a good place to think well. You're going to now be more focused on what you're doing. Active relaxation, I think, is important in that, yeah, belly breathing can help relax you with lowering the shoulders, but could you bring more awareness to what your tension relaxation state is before you serve? Because it's the one thing, really closed skill in tennis that you control, right? And you want to feel as loose as possible. So can you just bring more awareness? Can you just notice what the shoulder and the grip are like, right? And then could you use some positive self-talk at the end? Yes, you're going to be picking a serve location, but could it just be, you know, something around, oh, I love my serve, or just simply like, yes, let's go. Something that gets a positive emotion going right before the point. That's, you know, if I were to do this, Josh, maybe those might be some things I would layer on for these players. But this is a first good step. You know, right? These other things I'm mentioning, I think, would be sort of like, all right, now that we've done this successfully, could we layer on some more body awareness? Could then we layer on some more positive self-talk? But I think this is really very simple thing that anybody can do who's looking for a first serve percentage, who notices that they seem to serve fine in practice and not quite as well in matches.
Definitely. Definitely. And I think, that's very common, first of all, too.
Hugely.
I think recognizing that, adding in the breath as sort of a starting point. And then, yeah, maybe there's some self-talk like, you know, I love my serve, or this is what you've worked for. Something like that can be very helpful. You know, I think there can be a visualization piece as well, you know, in terms of visualizing your form or the flight of the ball. I think this is a really important starting point. And I think, the breath has different impacts. It helps to relax us. It helps us reset. And it can really help us to try to be more present, where whatever's happened in the last point has happened. It's out of our control. There's nothing we can do about it. We can't control the future in terms of what might happen, what could happen. The breath really helps us to be more present and sort of to center ourselves or ground ourselves in this moment, rather than, you know, being drawn in all these different directions in terms of going to the future, going to the past. It really helps us be present and here and in the here and now, which is where we want to be. You know, I think, and Brian, I know this is something you've mentioned in the past, but the most important point is the next one, because at any point in the match, because that's the only one that you have any sort of control over, the only one that you can actually impact. And I think using the breath in this way, and I think this was demonstrated really well by this study, using the breath in this way really helps us, probably as much as any other single tool. The breath helps us to be ready for that next point, because it helps us, you know, both relax and also really reset in a meaningful way, and helps us to, you know, feel ready and feel present going into the next point, rather than thinking what might happen, what could happen, and being maybe more results focused in terms of the future, or being more frustrated by the past, whether that be the last point, whether that be a line call that our opponent made, whether that be our frustration with where the score is or where our level has been up to that point. But it really helps us come back to the here and now and focus and put all our focus where it belongs, which is on that next point. And, you know, can I have that clear intention going into that next point? Can I have a plan going into it? And I think once we're able to reset and use our breath in that way, it's a lot easier to to have a plan, to feel like you have an intention going into the next point that you play.
So one objection you could make to this study is probably the small sample size, and that it's also a very specific demographic in terms of level. So I'm curious what you think of that, Josh. And you know, when I look at it, you know, just having experience in this, you know, obviously we both have a lot of experience in the tennis realm and these kinds of things. You know, can you generalize this? It feels to me like the study was well done. It was very in-depth, as you mentioned in the opening. And even the authors mentioned that that was, you know, something that was different for them and challenging, but I think also valuable. So yeah, is it generalizable? I think my intuition or my gut says that this is, that this is something that could benefit really anyone at any level, because of its simplicity, because it brings some at least regular thing you're doing between points to every single point, right? And so there's a lot of research on how routines, pre-performance routines, improve performance. So adding even just a little bit of structure there, something like this is beneficial. So to me, even though it's a small sample size, it feels like this is something that we could generalize to a broader audience. And again, maybe it's because of its simplicity is why I think that, but I'm curious as to your thoughts.
Yeah, I think it is generalizable. I mean, I think, and they even address this in the study, you know, one really key factor is the fact that a lot of players are, you know, more and more players, I'd like to think, are using their breath already as it is in between points. And, you know, whether that's a really established, structured in between point routine, whether that's just, okay, I want to take a breath or two, before the next point, you know, I think a lot of players are using it. Now, the question is, are they using it effectively? Are they using it well? Do they know why they're using it? And they even talked about that in the study that, you know, when players were asked about the pre-performance routine or what they do before a point, a lot of them couldn't necessarily come up with, you know, that quality of an answer. They maybe said, oh, I like to bounce the ball a few times, or, you know, maybe I take a breath. So I think players were maybe mentioning certain aspects of what an effective routine looks like, but not necessarily having a full understanding. So I think it could be generalizable, but I think maybe the biggest challenge is that there really is this significant difference between what players are doing currently, where some players have an established routine that includes using diaphragmatic breath. Some players are using, you know, their breath diaphragmatically. Some players are trying to use the breath, but probably in a less effective way. Some players aren't using it at all. So I think there's quite a range, quite a spectrum here. But I think it's definitely the type of skill that can apply to everyone and can be helpful for everyone.
For sure. So great discussion. And I think if people are interested in the study, feel free to reach out to us and we can provide you with a copy of that. And then you can take a look at it for yourself and go more in depth on it. So, well, that's our show for today. Thank you for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. As Josh mentioned, if you have any feedback or questions for the two of us, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com, especially if, you know, you want to hear more like research type episodes like this. We're happy to do that, or, you know, what you like about the show, what we can change, etc. If you are enjoying the content that Josh and I discuss on the show each week, please rate and review the podcast so other tennis enthusiasts can find it more easily. Additionally, to be notified of new episodes, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube. And you can also check us out on Instagram. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Where you can learn about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.